Hi, this is Thomas from Believe in the Run.
This is Robbie from Believe in the Run.
And this is Megan from Believe in the Run.
And you're listening to our weekly podcast about all things running, where we cover everything from a little bit of conversation about what we're up to, stuff that's in the news, and we usually have an interesting guest. This week, we got Seth Maxwell from New Balance, who is an actual designer of the shoe. So we have PLMs on every once in a while. That's a product line manager. But they're not the one who's actually designing the shoe. Seth sits down, pen to paper, stereotaper, me and Eric being a nice big plate of fish, sometimes, probably nowadays, digital designing. But he's the one who actually makes the shoe. And if you know the reference for that rap song that I was just doing, applause to you.
I did not.
I'm not sure that I did either. I'm sorry.
All right. Eric being Rakim, paid in full.
Okay.
Which you should listen to because it's a good song. Anyway, we're in the heat of grit. Robbie, why don't we start off with you, because you kind of have an update to your grit challenge. And what's going on, man?
I was doing pretty well grinding out grit, getting like, I was like 135 miles in, and had a slight tweak of my calf muscle that turned into more than that, I guess. And now I'm basically sidelined for the indeterminate future. Hopefully just this week, but we'll see.
I mean, if you got to be sidelined, though, you're in Florida, so that's not so bad.
No, I mean, yeah, except my kids are here, too. So, no, but it's actually, the Florida weather has been nicer than it was in Maryland last week. It was like
lower humidity and stuff.
Yeah, like I did get to go on one run before sitting down in a chair, and it was nice. It was actually like a nice morning run, like not that kind of cool, like nice breeze. So,
Megan, aren't we supposed to get like 60 degrees?
Yeah, we have there's a storm coming through tonight, and the next two mornings are going to be in the 60s, and I can't wait.
I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But that's a good time to mention that, like, hey, you know, grit is supposed to push yourself and push, you know, your comfort zone and mileage and stuff like that, and try to go a little further maybe than you are used to going. But we don't want you doing it to the extent where you're getting hurt. Obviously, you know, it's not worth it once, you know, a tweak comes in. What do you call that? A rest?
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. But the other thing is that I think I did run like 17 days in a row. So probably didn't help things out.
Yeah, I haven't taken a day off. Foam rolling I have done.
Yeah, but, you know, you'd think you learned your lesson after like doing this every few months for the last 5 years.
Yeah. What about you, Meg? How's your running coming?
Running's pretty okay.
You're already up there, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm battling a bit of a head cold that does not want to go away, but it hasn't prevented me from running, which is nice. So just, you know, trucking along, getting in miles.
So are you increasing your miles, or is this just your regular miles that you would be doing regardless?
I'm doing my normal marathon training, but I'm adding in like 2 to 3 miles extra on like some easy days.
Yeah, and you're a little over 200 miles in?
Yep.
It's pretty good. Yeah, I mean, for Meg, this isn't as much of a challenge as maybe it is for Robbie or myself, just because Meg's always running.
The head cold definitely makes it a little grittier.
It does. And maybe that's why you got it and I didn't. They're like, let's even the playing field.
There you go.
Make it a little better.
Life finds a way to help you, Thomas.
Yeah, it finds the chaos theory. I'm feeling pretty good. I'm pretty confident that I'll be able to finish off the month where I wanted to be. I'm at 200 and almost 4 miles right now, which I'm pretty excited about. Today was a day that I crossed over to Maverick. The last summer grit, I just did my marathon training. I ended up, you know, not trying to put in any extra miles or anything. So I was around 150. So it's been fun kind of playing along this time a little more intent, like with a little more intent. So I also haven't taken a rest day, which I don't know if this is stupid or not, but I haven't taken a rest day this month. It makes counting the days easier.
I'm gonna put it in the stupid column, but go keep.
We'll see. It's definitely not the smartest decision.
Yeah, but I'm trying to be smart other ways. I'm doing extra recovery stuff. I'm trying to get my sleep. I noticed somebody texted me around 9:30 last night, and I think I was already out. You know, I'm doing the baths, the salt baths, the
Epsom salt baths.
Epsom salt baths, which I highly recommend to everybody. And foam rolling and leg sleeving and
the baths works. I really struggle with in the summer because it's like you're so hot.
That's what I'm saying.
And then like the last thing you want to do is go sit in a hot bath.
Thomas kept saying, oh, do the Epsom salt bath. And every night I'm like, there's no way I'm taking a hot bath. It's like 95 I feel you degrees on that. Out.
Yeah.
You could take a lukewarm bath. As long as the salt dissolves.
I don't know. I don't know that I could. I feel like even after hot morning on, sometimes I still like have to start out hot. Like I can like, I can't just jump into a cold shower, which is weird because whenever I do runs, like trail runs and stuff, I have no problem like jumping into a cold creek. Yeah. But jumping into a cold shower just hits differently.
The other day I had to get ready real quick and I didn't have time to let the water heat up and I jumped in the water and it heated up as I was in there. And of course it was kind of shocking to get in the cold water in the beginning, but then once it started heating up, I was like, oh, it's too hot, and put it back down to like a pretty cool temperature. And I was like, once you get in there, you can make it work.
Yeah. Stick around for some more exciting play-by-play content of our shower and bath vibes.
We could move this right into Oohlers and talk about our bed temperature.
Lord.
Yeah. I still have yet to experience that life. Maybe someday.
Yeah. So we have about 10 days left. So we'll have one more podcast of grit before we get in there. I think, you know, it's been great for just getting out there and getting the miles and kind of feeling things out. So I'm enjoying it this time.
I think it's motivating, like in the mornings, to just like get up and go, because you're like, I have a limited time. I got to get in extra miles. Just go. Like, at least for me, I'm like, okay, just robotic, turn on, go start running.
It is true. That is the one thing that's very motivating, to get out of bed and just do it. And you never regret going for a run after you do it.
I will tell you, there's another person that's doing big miles and always seems to do big miles. Is Harvey, who just won Badwater.
Oh, yeah. Harvey Lewis finished at Badwater 135, I think, this morning.
This is his second time. Yeah. This is his second time winning. But the thing that's kind of crazy about it was I really don't remember hearing about Harvey until he did the race with Courtney DeWalter. Was at the backyard?
Yeah, Big's backyard. He was like, he won that for the U.S., like, They kind of did like a virtual type international thing or something like this past year.
Yeah.
I mean, they were there in Tennessee, but they raced against other countries. But yeah, I think he won that version, which was like 260 miles in a couple of days or something.
Yeah. And we had talked to Courtney about him when we interviewed her. So it's kind of interesting, you know, he's out there, he's just crushing miles kind of quietly. You know, I mean, Badwater is a tough one. I mean, it's Death Valley. It's 122 degrees.
Harvey's a school teacher, too. I think he's just like a history teacher. And he's just churning out these insane ultras, 45 years of age.
That's funny. He kind of looks like a history teacher.
He knows, right? This one, he finished in, I think he finished it in like, let me see, 25 hours and 50 minutes in Badwater. That's bonkers, dude.
Yeah. And what's the total difference? 135 or something?
Yeah, 135 miles, and that's an 11:29 mile minute pace.
Yeah, and that's in 122 degree heat, and the final climb is like 13 miles up of elevation. So, yeah, kudos to Harvey. That's pretty incredible. You know, it's funny, we're going to get focused on the Olympics because that's coming up this week.
I'm excited. I love the Olympics.
And
jazzed.
Wait, this is going to sound like a dumb question, but is ice skating in the Winter Olympics or the Summer Olympics? It's got to be a winter, right?
this is almost as good as our 10,000 meters versus 10K
discussion. Yeah.
I mean, I would assume, but for some reason, I always remember watching it.
Like, I think you're thinking of gymnastics.
That's right. The one without the ice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, which doesn't sound like our team. Like that, they're talking about canceling Tokyo still, because you know some of our gymnasts got COVID. The basketball team just arrived, but yeah, some of the athletes are getting COVID.
Did you see the cardboard bed thing?
They said that was not, that was false news.
Was it really? Oh man, yeah. I want that to be so true.
No.
What's the cardboard bed thing?
They said that they made their beds out of cardboard to prevent anyone from sleeping with each other.
That wouldn't stop anybody.
But it was not true.
They go full on homeless style on the, the Olympic Village.
I mean, that is, everybody talks about that. I'm surprised there hasn't been a documentary, or like they should bring the Bachelorette team over there and just make a show out of it.
I thought the same thing. It's amazing that there haven't been any like insider stories from like the whole escapades at the Olympics. Like I would love to know like
That'd be more exciting than the Olympics.
Yeah.
Taking the top specimens on the planet, putting them together and being like, all right, let's see what happens. It should be like Temptation Island Olympics.
Yeah. So Olympics will be on this weekend and for the next few weeks. So we'll chime in about that once they start.
All right. So breaking in here, tip number one, check in with yourself, especially if you're doing grit and you're upping the mileage. This week, we're reaching that final week of miles. You want to make sure that you don't hurt yourself. So if you start feeling something that doesn't feel right, take a step back, take a rest day, and just don't push it. All right, so Robbie, enough about the Olympics. I know you've been running in what I would consider a surprise choice for a shoe that you're in love with. First off, it's funny because Brandon, I was talking to Brandon in the office, and he's like, Robbie likes firmer, snappier shoes. And I was like, no, he doesn't. He likes cushion shoes. And I said, name a shoe that's not Robbie's favorite that isn't soft and cushion. And I said, he's going to name the Max Road 5 probably his top shoe of the year. That is not a firm, snappy shoe.
I do like a firm, snappy shoe, but I don't like a soft shoe. Like or a shoe with a lot of cushion. I really didn't like the RC Elite, or say, I don't love the Clifton. I mean, it's good. I would prefer the Rincon probably over that. But the Skechers Max Road 5, although it's like a crazy high stack shoe with like 38 millimeters, it's not a soft shoe in any way. That's the thing.
I think the Rincon 3 is a soft shoe though.
You think so?
I actually think it's softer than the Clifton. Like just, you can, it's more flexible. You kind of land in.
No, not softer.
What would you say?
I think it's
squishier.
No,
what's another word?
Maybe more. Not softer. I don't know the word I'm looking for.
All right.
Yeah, because you have to try the Max Road 5, and I'm actually surprised that Megan didn't. Well, you haven't run in the 5, have you, Megan?
She tested it.
No, I didn't.
You have one right back there.
The 5
has wear on it. Yeah.
News to me.
Yeah, Meg Ware tested it.
It surprised me that you wouldn't like it either, because I think what I love about it is that it's a lot of cushion, but it's not unstable. It's not too soft. It has a crazy good pop off the toe from that carbon infused H plate. Like you just feel like it picks you straight up. It rolls like through your stride amazingly because like they're HyperArch geometry,
which used to be the M stripe. Yeah.
Yeah. The grip is really good with the Goodyear. It's insanely lightweight. It's like 8 ounces for a size 9. Like that's for a max cushion daily trainer.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I'm open to being swayed over to that side. I don't know where it fits into our categories. Like if we're going to name best shoes of the year. Like, is it a max cushion shoe? Is it a plated shoe? Is it a daily trainer?
I just call it like a do-it-all shoe. It's like, it's all the things. I don't know.
Oh, so it might be Robbie's top shoe of the year.
Yeah, I will say I don't like the upper that much. Like, it's good, like it's breathable and stuff, but like there's a lot of generous room in the toe box, which is also why I think Megan might like it, because she's a little bit of a wider foot. But I could not, like, I took it out on an 11-mile long run, and I probably retied it like 3 times because I couldn't, my foot was sliding like in the toe box area, so I was starting to get like a hot spot, and I could not just like get it blocked.
Could you try like lock laces or something to get a better fit?
Maybe, but I mean, I was like pulling the laces from the bottom up, like wrenching it down, and it was like
That might be a problem for me because I have the narrow foot.
Yeah, I mean, it could be for sure. So like, but you know, I don't know. Other people might not have an issue. That was the only thing. But otherwise, I thought it was a pretty great shoe. I mean, I think it reminded me of the Brooks Aurora BL a little bit.
Okay.
Because it's a nitrogen infused like midsole, you know.
A little bouncy, little. It's not like super squishy cushion, but it's nice and comfortable and bouncy. Hey, so you don't love the colors of the Skechers?
No, I mean, I just don't like their colorways.
Let me ask you a question. I think that different brands can get away with different colors. Like the Rincon, that is a really pretty color combination. If Skechers had done their shoe that same color, would you be like, hey, that looks too SoCal? Or do you think it's like, you would still like it?
No, I would dig that. Like, yeah, I love Hoka's colorway. Yeah, it's just like something about Skechers. I think they pick colorways that are like, this is going to probably turn some people off, but like your classic, like, run store, like, group, like, kind of just, you know what I mean? It's just like,
are you talking like old school?
Yeah, it's just like stereotypical runner colorways. Like,
yeah, we got a gray. We got a white, a neon yellow.
Yeah, neon yellow, and just like these very obvious, I don't know, not very stylish colorways, I would say. But anyways, that's just a very personal preference because a lot of people love their colors. So,
what's the shoe run? How much does it cost?
It's $135. So, I mean,
it's right in there with that daily trainer, but with a plate, that's a pretty affordable one with a plate.
So I don't know. I think, and I think it's for Skechers. Oh, and by the way, did you see that comment on the Running Shoe Geeks from the guy who? So there was a guy who wore them for Ball State, that ultra. That
oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
he wore 315 miles straight in the Max Strip 5.
What did he say? It started to bottom out above the plate at a certain point.
Yeah, he said the Hyperburst above the plate started to bottom out, which, like, you're wearing over 5 days or whatever, 315 miles. But he said that it's, like, the best Skechers yet. So I kind of trust that judgment.
That's a good test.
Yeah, so that was good to hear that. Anyways, enough about that shoe. We can crack on with the rest of the show.
All right, speaking of shoes, we have a actual shoe designer on, Seth Maxwell from New Balance, and he's behind some of our favorite shoes this year. So we were pretty stoked to get him on and talk about, you know, all things going into like his path to becoming a shoe designer. So listen up. So we're talking to Seth Maxwell. You're a lead designer at New Balance Running, and you kick out some kick-ass shoes, right?
You know, I like to think so, but you guys tell me.
All right. Well, I will tell you. And
facts.
This is the second time you probably heard this from me, but the first time I opened the box and saw the Rebel V2, I was blown away. Like, that was one of the hottest shoes. We got it in the Habanero. What was the name of the colorway?
Yeah, I think that was Habanero and just like Munsell White. I think, yeah, that was a cool color.
All right. It was sick looking. I pulled it out and I was saying, I can be a little biased by the look of a shoe. Like if a shoe looks really good and maybe has some flaws, then I might give it a pass versus a shoe that looks like crap and is pretty good. I might tank it. And in this case, the Rebel V2's performance was awesome. The look of it is awesome. It's light, it's fast, it's responsive. And Robbie, you've run in it too, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful shoe all around. Like, I know, and you know this, Ben Johnson, one of our reviewers slash friends slash other Instagram guy, he put in 400 miles like in a month on them or something ridiculous.
Yeah,
like,
and loves them.
Yeah.
And then again, I'm going to ramble off a couple other that I think are good looking that you probably had something to do with. The new Prism V2 has a similar vibe.
Yep. Can I throw out another one?
Are you going to say the RC Elite too?
No, I'm not.
Okay. What are you going to say?
I'm going to say the High Aero, the trail shoe.
Oh, that's right. I forgot, Seth, you were involved with that, right?
I was, yeah, in the
video. Are you the guy that they're like, hey, that's our best designer, and if we want a shoe to look good, give it to Seth. If it's a middle market shoe, give it to the other guy.
Well, it's, you know, it's glad that, you know, it's great to hear that. And, you know, it's also probably great that this is a podcast medium, so your audience won't see me blush. But yeah, you know, I'm just like to think I'm a small piece of the just a broader design team, you know. So, you know, glad that some of the designs are cooking. I'm, you know, just, you know, it's great to hear those positive feedback out there. And, you know, awesome to see that, you know, just some of the designs we cook out are resonating with the market. But yeah, I like to think I am definitely middle of the road, and that everyone on the NB design team arsenal is, you know, just stacked. Like, you know, that's what I like to think. You know, I'm a little bit selfish in that way. I like to think that we have the best team, you know, bar none.
Yeah, and you know, I do that too. Like around here, we like to group think stuff and come up with stuff creatively together. I guess one of the things that I would ask, let's go back to the beginning, because I'm sure there's a lot of people who would love to design shoes or actually think they'd be good at designing shoes because they have an interest in running shoes, and it's probably harder than it looks. But so how did you start off in regular design school and then move to fashion design? Like how did it start?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I guess kind of even kind of like preluding a little bit even further, you know, just as many people, right, they probably have a propensity to draw, or, you know, they were really kind of creative, you know, as a young kid. And I was definitely like that way growing up. And, you know, I think, you know, especially in terms of footwear design, like, I think there's also has to be some sort of catalyst that like, oh, wait, there's like people design shoes, like these things are important, you know, like, I think like, you know, younger school athletics probably kind of introduces most kids into the footwear design kind of, you know, as a career path. And that was certainly the case for me. I grew up as a skateboarder, you know, maybe like a few of your audience probably will kind of relate a little bit to that. I just remember being like 10, like 11 and 13, you know, whatever. And just blowing through shoes constantly. And my mom just, you know, finally getting fed up, you know, she's like, I'm going to cut you off. Like, I'm not buying you these shoes anymore because you're going through them in like 3 weeks because you're destroying them. And that's when I learned the value of a dollar. That's when I learned the value of like a well-built shoe and how well, you know, it can help your performance in terms of like what I was doing. And, you know, also just, you know, mowing lawns, you know, constantly throughout the summers just to make sure I could afford something, you know, afford the next pair of skate shoes and be really precious with them. That's when I was like, okay, you know what, like there is something interesting when the shoe's built right. It, you know, it delivers. And if it's shoe built, you know, is built terrible, it's, you know, what a huge letdown. Right. And again, I think just kind of those two, you know, pieces kind of just worked well together. Me being somewhat creative growing up, also just having like an early introduction to shoes as like a potential, like something that needs to be built and something that needs to be made, kind of just like led me into where I am today. So, and again, you know, that interest kind of pervaded throughout high school. In college, I studied industrial design. It's a pretty broad, you know, kind of degree, I guess, a broad kind of education base, you know, anything from like this, a cup or a pen, you know, a car fender, you know, what else can I look at right now that's probably designed? A lamp, you know, everything's designed, you know, so just with that skill set in like that I learned in class, just about composition, about form, about tactility, about function, all of those things kind of like weighed in. But again, I always kind of knew going into that very broad degree that, hey, this is what I want to do. I want to design shoes. Usually because I know the performance shoes, you know, like it's important, you know, like if you're a high school athlete and you're running, you know, your spikes are the most important thing you're going to put on that day, right before a meet. And, yeah, so that's kind of how I, you know, just going into that, into school, knowing that's where I wanted to end up. I just, you know, would reach out and cold call people on LinkedIn, you know, designers or, you know, other people in the industry, and just ask them if I could like chat with them a little bit. And so, yeah, kind of forming my own kind of career trajectory and just making those loose connections was basically how I got into the industry. But yeah, like, you know, and to your earlier point, like, you know, anyone who's interested in pursuing footwear design, like, you know, something that's probably a little bit more of a tangent, but man, like anyone has never been more accessible. You know, you can reach out to anyone these days, right? Through like Instagram, through like Twitter.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, if you have an interest in, you know, or an aspiration to be a designer, just reach out to someone, you know, like, I think everyone in this industry is very open to sharing their experience and kind of giving some pointers along the way. You know, they might be busy, you know, but, you know, I have not encountered anyone yet who I've been like, okay, like, you know, maybe I won't talk to this guy again because he's like, or like this program, right? Yeah. But yeah, that's it.
Well, curious though, like you mentioned skateboarding, which is always fun because both Robbie and I had an interest in skateboarding. I think there's something creative about skateboarding in general, because it is like a fun way to get into gear as a kid, because you've got your wheels, your trucks, your boards, your decks, and the artwork on the decks. And then you've got your, you know, whether you're a Vans guy, a Converse guy, or, you know, now, you know, Nike has a strong, and New Balance has a strong skate division, but it kind of gets you into it. And maybe it seems to be a common thread for some of us. Now, you got into running shoe development and did it at New Balance. Did you work with anyone else before you got to New Balance?
Yeah, so right after college, I graduated in 2014. I got a year long internship at Reebok, which is another local Boston based company. And I started there, like I said, as an intern. I worked on the women's training team, which was a great, you know, great stab at, you know, introduction into footwear, into the process of, you know, producing a shoe and just getting to know the ins and outs of like calendars and materials and, you know, just the myriad of jargon that goes into like building something. And I was there for 3 years. And again, kind of just like, you know, working around the women's training business. But I always knew that, you know, I would say I'd also just in terms of running as an activity in the sport, like I really took a more serious interest a little bit later in life. Just knowing that, especially after starting kind of, you know, getting into running, you know, using as an ability to kind of explore a new city that I had never been to before as, you know, a way to get out and about and, you know, as like a source of, you know, social engagement as well. I was like, you know what, like running is hard, you know, and like to build these shoes is like, it's, you know, I feel like that's what really kind of, you know, separates the wheat from the chaff in a way. You know, if you can really build a great running shoe, then like, what can't you do? So I always had an interest in like building a great running shoe, and just working with a great team that knew how to do it. And I felt like New Balance, again, being kind of like a local Boston brand, I had a couple friends that worked inside that industry, or worked inside that brand rather. And I was like, you know what, like, I wonder if I can just like send it for my portfolio. Like, we'll just see if anything kind of shakes out. And it did quickly. So, and it was, you know, it was kind of like a dream come true, you know, like I think in my interview, I was mentioning, you know, like just iron sharpens iron, you know, and, you know, I feel like New Balance had always had a great reputation of just building like solid, you know, very reliable, very like dependable, you know, running shoes, like, you know, like the training stuff, right? Like I was running in the 880s at the time. And that was like, okay, you know what, like these guys know what's up, and, you know, I'm happy to be a part of it. So learning every day.
You're already working on 2023 at this point, right?
Like, yeah, it's, you know, when I first started the industry, I was like, you know, fresh out of school, I'm like, this comes out like 2 years later, like, holy cow, like, this is going to take forever to get out. And it's funny how quickly the time kind of rolls by. So, something I work on it, you know, kind of out the door, and it's already, you know, in the production cycle, and I'm working on the, you know, an update of a, you know, the, that shoe or, you know, additional model or whatnot. I'm always surprised how quickly it does kind of come to fruition and starts to reach shelves and, you know, be reviewed by, you know, by you guys. And I will say you guys definitely have like a, you know, reviews and any kind of commentary that we see on a shoe, like, we read that stuff like gospel. we kind of all share it around in our team's chats, being like, man, I cannot believe Thomas bashed this. Like,
I usually get a text from Danny saying I didn't understand the meaning behind the shoe. I'm like, if it doesn't feel good to run in, I found the meaning of the shoe. It's easy.
I did want to ask you, like, since you've, you know, been with New Balance, and I know it's only been a few, is it 3 years?
Yeah, it's been about 4 years, actually, coming pretty soon. Yeah.
4 years. Okay. What has been your favorite shoe to work on or design?
Man, that's a good one. I mean, as we previously talked about, the Rebel was just a wild ride from start to finish. The whole brief of that shoe, and I'm pretty sure, you know, Danny's probably alluded, but the whole brief of the shoe and the idea behind it was just like, well, let's just make a fun shoe. You know, the Rebel V1 was a lot of fun. It was like funky geometry. It was some interesting kind of sculpting and shapes that really, I feel like, propelled a different way of thinking for us internally, and just how we approached like kind of forming some different, you know, base form and outsole, like bottom, you know, sole unit nets and gestures that were like, if we can just capture that feeling and like dial it up, you know, just like amplify it up like 10 points. What would that look like? So everything about that shoe is was just like, okay, what's kind of cool? I actually have a, you know, half pair here that's not going to do any benefit to the listeners, but just that, like, ideas of like, you know, that lenticular badge on the midsole, just oscillating between the fuel cell and the New Balance word mark.
I always thought that was a nice touch.
that was like straight out of like a Scholastic, you know, book fair bookmark, you know, kind of like idea. Just like, that's, you know, it's weird and it's fun, it's funky and it's kind of fun, and you know, how can we kind of like lean into that kind of idea as just like a way to kind of amplify the experience for a consumer and just you know, celebrate some oddities, you know.
I mean, the shoe feels so good on the foot. Like, that's one thing that it not only looks good, but it feels like, the way the upper feels on the foot is fantastic. But the crazy thing for me is, like, you're looking at that shoe and you're now designing the fourth one and getting on that. Like, by the time we see it, we get all excited for it. Are you already bored of this shoe and like, well, yeah, that was great, but now I'm on to something even better? You, what if you could see what's coming up? And maybe I have.
It's kind of like a, you know, we always joke sometimes in design that, like, we're never going to be 100% happy with whatever we do, because by the time, you know, something comes out, we're like, oh, if I could have gone under the hood again, you know, if I could have just like tweaked one little thing, like, oh, that would have been so much better. You know, like,
do we ever catch that? Like, do we ever pick up, like, in our reviews, have we ever like, this could have been better? And you're like, yeah, it could have. Or are you always, or do you feel more defensive?
Oh no, 100%. Like, usually, you know, it's almost like validating when something gets knocked, you know, because it's like, yeah, we ran out of time, or there was some sort of, you know, calendar obligation that we couldn't meet. You know, just sometimes there's just so many things outside the, you know, our control. You know, for better or for worse, I think we do a decent job of trying to balance all the variables and make sure we're, you know, checking all the right boxes. But something, you know, something's bound to fall, you know, fall out by the wayside in a way. And it just makes us more diligent, you know, like when you guys catch it. Yeah.
Well, a good question for that is, the RC Elite 2 came out and you guys went with full rubber on the toe, and previous model had, what is it called? Substrate. What is it?
It was called Dynaride.
Dynaride. Yeah. And people like the Dynaride. And, is it like, sometimes, like, is the choice made by supply lines, or is it made by, like, how do you make a choice to switch from something that was popular? Is it just by feel? Like, what makes a change like that?
Yeah, it's sometimes it's many different variables. One thing that's New Balance as a brand is really striving for and, you know, pushing forward towards right now is just amplifying our amounts of eco-conscious materials. So how can we find materials that are like, you know, either using recycled, you know, polyester yarns, EPM, or just, you know, having, you know, finding material that has like a little bit less, just kind of negative impact in terms of the supply chain. And Dynaride's a direct injection kind of process that was used on that V1. But rubber comes from a tree. And so that, I think that was like, these are kind of like the conversations that just ended up directing where the trajectory of that shoe was going. And the team, you know, team that like did analyze and look, they're like, okay, the Dynaride performs really well. It has like a traction that's like, you know, how can we top it? But then like use case came into play being like, okay, if we're taking the shoe, you know, on a marathon kind of course where the terrain's going to be a little bit more kind of even keel in a sense, you know, it's just like, do we need that if we're going to kind of amp up a potential, like, you know, more sustainable kind of like trajectory of where we want to take the shoe. So those are the kind of the conversations that happen, you know, for better or for worse, right? Like sometimes things like fall by the wayside, and we, you know, I think Dynaride will definitely make a return. You know, especially, you know, so maybe keep your eyes peeled, but like, just be, but sometimes I think sometimes the amount and dosages of things, we just can kind of like be mindful about how much we celebrate something versus, try to find an alternative that's, better matches a trajectory where we want to take the company.
All right. This one's kind of a two-parter. So first part is, you know, when you get into modifying a shoe and updating a shoe, sometimes it's hard to think outside the box and innovate because you have kind of like a shoe that like there's an expectation from the consumer. And so experimenting gets a little tougher. And then on the same question, I'm going to say like the shoes that we love, the RC, the Rebel V2, the RC Elite, those guys don't sell as many as like an 880 or a even a 1080. And some of the more staple shoes. So the ones that we get really geeked up about and love aren't really moving the needle for New Balance. And you probably have to also balance your attention on shoes that move the needle financially and shoes that are exciting to work on. So with that innovation thing in mind and how you make sure that you're staying fresh and going forward, and let us know how that happens. And then also like how much freedom is that with the shoes that are gonna, does that make sense, Robbie? Am I
seeing? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Still yeah. Like, it, Dad.
Yeah. I mean, it fell asleep, but it makes sense. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Like you hit the nail on the head. You know, some of the biggest challenges is like, yeah, when you have an 880, right? Like what that shoe keeps the lights on in many ways, you know, like it's definitely a big volume driver. How can we make sure that we keep it fresh, we keep it moving in the right direction in terms of where we want to, you know, bring some, like in terms of the more exciting kind of products that we push out, like how can we take some of those elements and make sure we keep that philosophy alive, you know, with an 860, you know, with a 1080 in many cases. And it's a challenge, you know. The good thing is, again, that there's a great team effort that all kind of has like some eyes, you know, on each project. To make sure it's moving in the right direction. I think, you know, as you said, kind of we designers, we want to push it, you know, we want to kind of make it a little bit uncomfortable, try to push that needle just a little bit further, just to kind of, you know, present something new to the marketplace. But also, you know, the challenge, of course, is being mindful just about what the consumer is going to, like the appetite is, like what are they going to, like what are they willing to accept? In terms of an update to their beloved, you know, 880 that they've had the previous three generations of, and they know what that shoe feels like. So changing things like midsole compounds and underfoot ride, it becomes a very like strenuous, you know, sticking point, becomes a very, you know, very sticky in terms of what we want to, willing to risk in terms of changing, you know, but I think it's all for the better, right? Like, you know, to that point about, you know, shoes having a great, you know, kind of like a cult following or a fan base, you know, that fan base is there for a reason in many cases, you know, so like there's something there that already works, and just being, you know, respectful of what that, you know, all the study and all the research that went into doing what that shoe already has been, you know, just recognizing that and also trying to approaching it with a way that feels a little bit new and exciting. But then, you know, to your point too about the RC Elites and the Rebels, like those are shoes where it's just uncharted territory. It's a, you know, blue horizon. Like what can we really provide to a consumer that's really exciting? And those are a lot of fun. not to split two words, you know, mince words. Those are just a really good time of just like seeing what we can do and make like a really optimal shoe with like a streamlined build, really minimal kind of construction. You know, that's what gets all of us up in the morning. But we obviously have to a diligence to the business to make sure we keep the lights on too. So it's a good time. It's, we often get a good mix of range of products. So, you know, just this past season, I was working on a fresh foam model that was one of those kind of, you know, drivers, you know, market drivers. It keeps us on our toes. So it's a good mix.
Yeah. So kind of a little more background on you, I guess. What are some of your design inspirations personally?
Ooh. That's a really good question. You know, I always like to say, yeah, to that point, like I always like to say every designer has a handwriting, you know, like, and only when you kind of become like accustomed to seeing someone else's handwriting, can you pick out their projects, you know? Another small thing, you know, an interesting thing is that the footwear industry itself is very small, you know, like everyone here kind of knows everyone else, you know, like we know people at Adidas, we know people at Nike. It's always exciting to see products that come out from other brands have a stamp from someone you recognize. You're like, okay, that's, you know, that's my one friend over there, you know, like, you know, it's terrible, you know, like, you know, just ripping off each other. And in terms of for me, I guess, like, I'm always inspired and like kind of driven by just the idea of how can we make materials feel really, I guess just like natural and intuitive, is probably maybe a too pretentious way to kind of, summarize that, but I always like to start every project with just like, what's the material that's going to deliver the best feel, the best hand feel? Yeah, naturally kind of communicates the function that we're trying to get after. Just speaking of a specific example of that Rebel, just the kind of screen door looking mesh, it was like, hey, how can we deliver something that feels really just smooth and light? You know, I think it gets picked up quite a bit on. And the contrail lines, again, like how can we get something that feels like if it's moving, you know, feels like it's moving when it's on, like standing still on a shelf. You know, just like kind of like these loose kind of broad concepts are, I get really like, you know, excited about, and, you know, to see it kind of translate from, you know, the start of the, like the idea of just like writing down some, like, you know, jotting down notes being like, oh, I want this shoe to feel light. You know, it's like, oh, that's pretty broad and kind of has a hard way to, you know, you can't pinpoint that quite, you know, quite easily. So. It is kind of interesting to see that translation.
Check in number two. Hopefully you're having a nice run today. One of the ways that I'm trying to stay healthy throughout Grit is I'm slowing down the pace a little bit and not being as concerned with what the pace times are. So it eases back, puts less stress on my muscles and tendons, and it helps you get through. So if you're feeling a little tired, just slow down a little bit.
But I will say, personally, like I was saying, I love the New Balance trail designs. I think my other
favorite. You have to understand, Robbie's got a camp vibe going.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
I have a Subaru Outback. Judge me all you want.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Hiero I was in love with. I just wore it camping last weekend, I think, 2 weekends ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah. For sure, one of my favorites. And then I also love the design that you did. I believe you did this. It's the, you use the remnants from the factory floor. And did you actually design that? I was kind of like, wasn't sure about that. But maybe you can talk about that shoe, which is kind of like a one-off thing, but was still a pretty cool concept.
Yeah, that was definitely a one-off thing. You know, in kind of going back to New Balance as a brand and the kind of strategy behind doing something that's so unique and kind of oddly specific in a way is that I always say that New Balance, I feel like, punches above its weight class. You know, it's really kind of always taking swings and doing some interesting stuff. And it's great that there's, you know, somewhat of an appetite out there to, you know, at least kind of explore these opportunities. And the sugar in particular you're referencing is that it was the test run three. And the idea was that, yeah, it was just like after every single production run for any shoe, you know, 3 years ago, that like anything that was left over was just going to be rolled up on these giant, you know, 52-inch, you know, wide rolls, slid on a shelf, and then left there, you know, for months on end until it was like, okay, you know, we filled up all these storage units. We need kind of like, you know, we're going to shut all this stuff in and burn it. So our idea was like being kind of like, you know, waking up to that realization, being like everything we make has a slight bit of, you know, excess dead stock, you know, waste, essentially. How can we make the most of this and, you know, kind of keep our eyes clued in about what we're doing, you know, just be more mindful about how we build these things. And that shoe was built on that Hero, the V5 sole, using recycled pellets from a colorway that we didn't actually go out on. So that's why it's that purpley kind of mix. We had a colorway, we made all these samples and we're like, yeah, we're going to cancel the colorway. And we had all these extra pellets and we're like, okay, well, let's make a colorway that uses some of that extra, you know, stock that we had built. And then the upper was just like grabbing a bunch of waste fabrics and try to be really kind of mindful about our pattern yields and, you know, make something that kind of looks like a shoe.
Yeah, I love it. It reminds me of like Cotopaxi, what they do, kind of like taking the
every different bag will
just,
be different.
Yeah, just yeah. Like all the colors and just throwing them all together. It's pretty cool.
Speaking of colors and stuff like that, do the fabric companies come to you guys and say, or the you know, the people that are making the meshes and stuff and say, hey, here's the colors that we have available, or do you guys go to them and say, you know, we'd really like to make a purple RC Elite, or we really like to do this. How does that work? Because it's weird. Like the first prism was that green color. And I noticed that green color came out in a Saucony shoe and it came out on another shoe. And I'm like, are they all just getting the same, distributor? Or is this something that's just weird that these are the colors this year? And they're like, yeah, let's go with that.
It is kind of odd when that does happen. I agree. I would say like New Balance has a color, a whole color team that their whole, you know, sole kind of like focus and charge is identifying what shades are going to be, you know, exciting and, you know, 2 years out. And the kind of like trend service forecasting, you know, networks that are used oftentimes kind of present some like ideas about what could be cool, you know, like for instance, that Prism had that, what was that color? I think it was like pixel green. And I was like, okay, this is like the shade that we're going to be really excited about for, you know, for this shoe. And especially for that RC Elite, that was definitely a wild card. We were like, okay, I think we can make this work. So the color team kind of arranges these Pantone colors that, you know, meet the needs and the inspiration that we're hoping to, kind of get after. And, we'll send that to textile suppliers, you know, like, hey, here's the RC Elites, you know, upper mesh, here's the shade that we want to use. Like, can you make this work? And oftentimes materials will have, this is a little bit more jargony, but like materials will have some like limitations in terms of what kinds of threads they can use. Anything usually that has like a little bit of a translucent look to it is usually restricted by the colors you can use. But I believe since we were so fired up about that purple, and like I think even the pink color that the RC is coming out with, both of those were kind of complicated shades because they're so bright. That we had to work with the supplier in order to make sure that those were pretty accurate in terms of what we wanted to get. But yeah, so that's, it's a little bit of both, I would say. Sometimes like suppliers will make a pullover like of material and we're like, whoa, that was a wild color. Like, can we use this? And they're like, sure. And we're like, red.
Well, like the habanero, like nobody has put out, like the last true yellow shoe I can think of was probably like a Fast Twitch from way back. Like I can't remember. So it was just refreshing to see, you know, like that color back in the shoe lineup. And there's some classic colors that I'm like, why aren't people using in the shoe design? And it just seems like it's weird because you'll see like, if you guys are all forecasting, you're all forecasting similar color palettes, it seems like. In this year, New Balance stands out a little bit from the group with colors like the purple and the habanero and stuff like that.
Do you want more red shoes, Tommy?
I do like red shoes, but I also like some of these white shoes. Like when like, I'm not sure if it's New Balance who does it when they're developing a shoe, but a lot of them come in white and they look so good. And I'm like,
oh, the white RC Elite 2 looks incredible.
Yeah.
The Neo Flame. Yeah. That looks, I think, smokes.
Yeah. And just the shades of white, different shades of white, almost like that yellowed dashboard. Like if you left your shoes out in the sun, they got it. But yeah, it's just interesting to me because I think it all plays into, you have a very short amount of time for someone to decide they're going to purchase your shoe. They go into a store, they see it online, they try it on their foot. And I think that color and design play such a huge emotional part in the sale, that if you have a shoe that stands out and they happen to like that color or like that thing, it makes a huge difference. So if your shoe looks modern and fresh and you have to design it 2 years out, and that's tough. That's a hard job.
Yeah, it's not easy, Thomas. No, I mean, it's a lot of fun though too. You know, I think the ability, I feel very, you know, very thankful and appreciative that I get the ability to kind of make something, you know, like it's something I feel like has always been an aspiration, you know, of mine, just to be able to kind of build something and see it come to life. And also, again, like, I think there's probably also no greater reward to see that it resonates with others, you know. You know, as you mentioned, I think that the barometer for how long it takes a consumer to purchase is like less than 3 seconds or something. So to be able to form like an instant, like, you know, hey, this is intriguing out of this, you know, a shoe wall, you know, like to be able to kind of have that like level of like, oh, like, you know, I contributed that in some manner is, you know.
I mean, it's like, it's got to be like food. Like, first you taste with your eyes, they say. And, you know, when you're looking at the wall, somebody might not even get to see if fuel cell feels good underfoot if they don't like the look of the shoe. But in that vein, you said you run. And I'm guessing you run a New Balance. I'm guessing a lot of times you're running in a New Balance to see improvement, so you're not getting the off-the-shelf shoe. But I'm wondering, of our current lineup at New Balance that aren't like future shoes, what do you like to run in? What would be your pick from 2021?
I mean, definitely I run in the 1080s probably most days. And I have racked up so many miles in the Rebels, that, to your point, like, I've already moved on to the next one. The Rebel V2 has been, you know, that's been my workhorse as well. I love the Moors, but I feel like the 1080s just deliver what I, you know, what I'm kind of looking for. It's a good bit of both. And in some cases, you know, it has enough cushion that it feels good for daily training, but, you know, it's, if I wanted to kind of just like not, you know, do something sub eight, like it still kind of catches that. It still works for me in that way. Yeah, I feel like those two shoes for me are no brainers.
Usually we have questions that kind of wrap up the interview that are along the lines of, you know, runners. So it would be like celebratory meal, favorite shoe to run in, but it's going to be New Balance. So we already know that. you know, I guess if you weren't designing shoes,
yeah,
what would you be doing?
Oof, man, another solid question. You know, like, I think that is the blessing and the curse of design, is that once you're kind of focused on building something, it's like, what else is there? Like, law school? I don't know. Like, I don't think I feel like if I was, you know, I probably focus on like furniture, you know. I think just like anything that has like a kind of human element that like people interact with. There's just so much that goes into it, and just understanding like what's comfy or what feels great or what's beautiful, you know, that the arbitrary and ever elusive term of like what, you know, what captures someone's attention. I love that stuff, you know, so maybe that's where I'd be.
I think that there is something addictive about it. I worked at a screen printer when I was young, and designing something and then seeing it made, there's something about it that's kind of magical, that you put your creativity out there and you see it come back to you, and it's something that you can hold and touch, that I think it is, I don't know if it's, what do you call it? I was primal, like, almost.
Tactile response. Yeah.
And so I can't imagine with you, you know, it's a much more formal process. Like, you have to send it away. It comes back from China. It's got, you know, or wherever they're developing it, and that waiting period and then sending it back. But there has to be some sort of satisfaction holding something in your hand, or seeing, you know, going around Boston, you see somebody running in the Rebel and you're like, that's me. I did cool. That.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's a feeling you can't ever get back from after you've tried it. You know, like just building something is so, you know, yeah, primal is probably the best way to describe it. It's just like it just feels so natural when you're doing it, you know. And yeah, to your point, like having someone kind of like recognize and like they incorporate, like they made it conscious effort to buy that one shoe because it works for them, and being like, oh, you know what, like I helped that person, like, you know,
have a better run.
Have a better run, you know, like, you know, get people out there, like, you know, it's I can't imagine not doing what I'm doing right now.
I think that might be the biggest thing that's misunderstood about what we do and like the motivation behind what we do. But like when we started doing this, it was just that we wanted to share what makes for a better run, what makes for a better running experience. Like you said, if you have the wrong shoes on, it sucks and running's hard. If you have the right equipment, it feels good and it feels better. And those little tweaks and personalizing your footwear and getting things to it help you enjoy the sport more. And you know, that's our game. And you're on the other end of that where you're trying to create a better experience for people and create a better. So, you know, it's probably easier from our side to just critique what you do. And, you know, so we always appreciate the fact that you'd even, you know, take any of our feedback or listen to anything that we're saying. Like you said, you share some of our comments with your team. That blows us away because, mm-hmm. we're just here trying to make it entertaining for people to find a better feeling through running.
Yeah. I think the end goal is just to get people, you know, get people excited, you know, like life is great and running is fun, you know, and you know, what can we, yeah, I think we're, you know, I think brothers in arms, we have a common mission and just getting people out there and, you know, enjoying it, you know?
All right, man. It was very cool. Hopefully one of these days we'll get to go up there and tour New Balance and get to see you in person and, you know, look at some of your sketches and stuff like that. And
yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, and thanks a lot for having me on the pod, and yeah, keep on doing what you guys are doing. Really appreciate it.
Final check-in. This is it. You just finished another run, hopefully, or you're almost finished with another run. You can go put those results in if you're doing grit. Otherwise, you can just load up to Strava and enjoy the fact that you got another run in and you took care of business. So have a great day. All right, that was great, Robbie. That was a lot of fun interviewing Seth, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great. Cool dude. Good conversation. I love all his designs, so looking forward to see what else he's got up his sleeve.
Yeah, I think we're going to see some cool stuff coming down the line. Anyway, that wraps it up. I want to say thank you to Nick, our producer, for putting this together. Meg, anybody you want to thank?
Thanks to our listeners. You guys are awesome.
What about your mom?
Meg, I could say hi to your mom. I'm down here in Florida.
Oh, no. You know what's funny? She's in Charleston, South Carolina, visiting the baby.
All right. Well, hi, Robin. And then I just thank Seth for coming on and New Balance for providing Seth for us. And that was great. Thanks to Skechers for sending in the Max Road 5 and for Robbie to review and fall in love with. That was great. Anything else that we need to cover?
That's it, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you.